his thinner chest. He looked in shape, but it was the shape of someone who hadn't hit all their secondary growth spurts yet, and now he never would. He raised the weapon he'd taken out of Domino's chest, and it didn't look magical. It looked like a short sword, but the blade was almost pyramid-shaped, and the blade wasn't... It seemed heavier and oddly shaped. I tried to look at the blade coldly, trying to see the magic in it and not Domino's blood all over it. If I looked at it clinically, I wouldn't start screaming again. Maybe. The one who was sitting on me moved, and I was there to sweep at his hand with the needle in it.
Come help me hold her.
There was a noise behind me. The younger one looked at the noise.
If you don't want me to kill that one too, we need to get out of here before he comes too.
Then help me with her.
I wanted to look back for Ethan, but he was only unconscious. They'd said so, and there was no reason for them to lie about it after what they'd just done to Domino. I kept my attention on the two men in the room who could hurt me. The rest would have to wait. I prayed for Ethan and for myself, and for Domino, though I knew dead when I saw it. The dead don't need prayers. That's for the living.
You're not going to win this one, Anita Blake.
It was the young guy standing over me now. There were no extra lines on his face. He still looked about 17, but his eyes? It was like looking into two dark caves. There was another small sound behind me. It sounded like a knife moving in flesh, but that couldn't be it. Our attackers were in front of me, and Ethan was alone.
Calm. I had to be calm, had to think.
You know my name, but I don't know yours. He smiled.
I am Rodrigo, and this is Hamish. Do not give her our names.
Why not? She's not going to tell anyone. That let me know they meant to kill me. Not here and now, but I wasn't getting away to share any information. So why not kill me here? And I could reach my gun before they killed me or knocked me out. The big man settled more solidly against my waist.
Forget the gun. You can't get to it, he said.
He was right. I hated that he was right, but he was.
What do you want?
Aren't you going to ask why?
Rodrigo asked.
Why what? I asked.
Why we're doing this? Why we killed them? Why we haven't killed you?
No, I'm not going to ask any of that.
Why not?
He asked, and smiled as if he realized the irony. Because it won't help. He looked at me with those cave-dark eyes. I realized the only other person I'd ever seen with eyes like that was a serial killer, and one of the most frightening people I'd ever met. It let me know what I was dealing with, but I bet he hid behind that youthful face and slaughtered people joyously.
My, how very practical of you.
You have no idea how practical I can be, Rodrigo. Rodrigo laughed, head back and delighted.
Was that a veiled threat?
Do you think you will ever be in a position to harm me?
Oh, that is optimism such as I have not heard in centuries.
Don't tease her, Hamish said.
What does it matter?
The look she's giving you matters.
Rodrigo knelt beside us. His knee brushed my arm and I moved away. He tried to pin my arm, but I kept moving it away. He frowned at me like I was a misbehaving child.
Now, Anita, you know you can't possibly elude us.
We will pin you, and Hamish will give you the shot.
I know, I said.
Then it's not very practical for you to struggle against the inevitable, is it?
I suppose not.
But you're going to struggle anyway, aren't you?
I lay there looking up at both of them. The big guy was getting sort of heavy on my waist and stomach. Funny how if I was having good sex, the man never seemed that heavy. But in other circumstances, I realized just how much smaller I was than most men. I wasn't going anywhere with him sitting like that, but I didn't have to move him. I just had to keep him from sticking whatever was in the syringe into me. If I could delay everything long enough, I was still hoping that the cavalry would ride to the rescue. I just needed to give them as much time as I could.
Yes, I'm going to struggle anyway.
We aren't supposed to kill you, but we can hurt you. If you make us hold you down like this, I will use it as an excuse to cause you pain.
Somehow that doesn't surprise me, I said.
He will enjoy hurting you, Hamish said.
I believe that.
Do not put yourself at his mercy, Anita Blake.
I'm not at his mercy.
You're here, Hamish.
Do not look to me for protection from Rodrigo. That would be a grave mistake.
He said it and he meant it, but he wasn't happy about it. Again, I smelled division in the ranks. Duly noted, I said.
I like hurting people, Rodrigo said.
You like killing people, I said.
That too, but I really do enjoy a slower death. Otherwise, I'd have stabbed your lover through the heart instead of the lungs.
I couldn't keep my eyes neutral. It made him smile wider.
Oh, you didn't like that at all.
Let's do this, Hamish. I know what sweet nothings I want to whisper in her ear.
Then grab her arms and stop talking us both to death.
Oh, when I do anything involving you, it won't be talk, old friend.
I had seldom heard the phrase old friend sound so hostile. He just threatened you, I said.
He does that, Hamish said.
Roddy, I don't think he's afraid of you. Are you, Hamish?
I fear no one, he said.
Not even Roddy, or especially not him.
Why are we letting her talk like this? Hamish asked.
Rodrigo frowned. He looked like a petulant middle schooler, as if he should stamp his foot and complain to his mommy.
I don't know.
Hold her, Hamish said, and this time he meant it, and so did I. I used my feet and legs and every bit of lower body I had to try to throw him off me. I didn't expect to really move him off me, but it kept him from using the needle on me, and that was my goal. Not to let them put whatever that was in me, and to stay in this room until help came.
Hold her, Hamish yelled.
Rodrigo got one of my wrists pinned, but I got a palm strike under his chin that rocked him. He tried to hit me back, and I somehow managed to block him with my one free arm, which pissed him off even more.
Stop squirming!
Squirming is one of my best things, I said.
This is going to happen. Stop fighting it. Fuck you! Only if it would cause you pain.
I doubt you're that well endowed. He snarled at me, sending his beast's energy playing along my skin. I breathed it in like a familiar cologne, but he shut down too fast. I couldn't tell what scent it was. It was a level of control of his energy that was really rare, but then he was one of the Harlequin. One of the ones who had fled across the world and the ones with us hadn't found yet or had given up on finding. We'd told them to stay home with us and leave the world alone. If I lived through this, we'd be changing that policy. He pinned one wrist under his knee, making sure to grind it to hurt, but I'd been hurt worse before, even recently. And I knew for a fact that once they got me out of this room unconscious, I'd eventually be hurt a hell of a lot worse. He got a hand on my other arm and my wrists were pinned under his knee and hand. I knew it was over, but I still moved the rest of me as much as I could. Hamish put his hand on my chest and leaned, and that pretty much ended my upper body moving, and if he'd pressed long enough, my breathing. He shoved the needle in my arm and I couldn't stop them. I screamed and Rodrigo slapped me hard enough that I saw stars for a second. When my vision cleared, I was already starting to feel warm.
What did you give me?
My words were clear, but my tongue was starting to feel thick. All of me began to feel like it was getting wrapped in cotton like some breakable object to be wrapped up for shipping. Whatever the stuff was, it was fast acting. Rodrigo leaned over me, petting my hair, and I couldn't stop him. They still had my arms pinned, but it wouldn't matter for much longer. My body was starting to feel heavy, thick, and distant.
It doesn't matter what we gave you, it's working.
He leaned his dark eyes over mine, and it was too close to the intimate eye contact that Domino and I had just shared. It helped me fight clear for a moment. I dropped every metaphysical shield I had and silently broadcast to anyone and everyone, everything that could hear me, feel me. I needed help, and I needed it now!
What are you doing?
Rodrigo asked, leaning so close that I smelled the soap he'd showered with, and underneath that was heat and fur and leopard.
Get back, Roddy. Don't touch her now.
I couldn't focus on the man sitting on top of me now. Couldn't make my eyes work the way I wanted. I kept watching the blonde.
Why can you touch her and I can't? He asked.
Because I'm not one of her animals to call and you are.
I stared into the were-leopard's cave-dark eyes and thought,
mine,
he said.
No.
The drugs hit a new level and my beast quieted. Everything quieted. I couldn't move, almost didn't want to move. Rodrigo petted my hair again.
That's better.
He moved to one side and used my hair to lean my head back so I could see Ethan. I couldn't have moved enough to do it myself now. Ethan dangled from the door, a knife through his shoulder pinning him in place while the rest of his body hung there. He was deeply unconscious, or the pain would have revived him.
I did that,
Rodrigo whispered near me, and then rolled my head to look at Domino.
And that. And if we get to kill you, I'll beg to help. I am not your leopard to call. I am something you cannot tame.
It took almost all the effort I had to make my lips move and whisper,
Harlequin.
It startled him, as if he didn't think I'd know what they both were. But what else could they be? Nothing else could have taken out two of my tigers with all their training, and me this fast. He reached toward Domino and came back with his hand scarlet with fresh blood. He wiped the blood across my lips, and I couldn't stop him.
When she is done with you, I will make you choke on your own blood.
He shoved his fingers down my throat, but I didn't choke for him.
Swallow the blood of your tiger, Anita. Swallow him down for the very last time.
I tried not to, but I couldn't do anything but swallow. All blood tastes the same, like sweet copper pennies. Darkness was starting to eat my vision. My tongue was almost too thick to use, but I fought to say it while I stared up into Rodrigo's black eyes.
All the Harlequin belong to me.
Then the darkness came, and I wasn't sure if it ate me or I became it. But Rodrigo's black eyes were the last thing I saw. Chapter 77. I knew I was dreaming, but I knew it wasn't my dream. I was wearing a dress from a century that I'd never lived through. The skirt was heavy with one of those odd hoop skirts, if that's what you call it, that made the dress go out to either side of your hips like you should be able to set plates on the stiff satin cloth. The cloth was red and gold, and the tight, cinched waist pushed my breasts up too much, so that even I was distracted when I saw myself in the mirror that was leaning up against the stone wall. It was a very realistic dream. I could feel the long skirts brushing against the rough stone floor. I had enough of Jean-Claude's memories to know that there should have been sweet rushes or something on the floor. But it was rough-hewn rock, almost cave-like, except there were windows, long, thin, and reaching almost to the high-vaulted ceiling. I could hear the ocean, feel the wind of it. I thought, but where is the smell of the ocean? And that was when I knew it was a dream. There's no scent in dream. That part doesn't work when we sleep, which is why most people don't smell smoke from fire in time. Noises wake us, but not smells. Whoever had picked the dress had left my hair loose, curling thick and utterly black around the whiteness of my skin. My eyes were dark. Some trick of the light in the room made them look black, but I had Rodrigo's eyes carved into my brain, and I knew my eyes were brown because his were truly black. A natural blonde with black eyes. You didn't see that much.
The Welsh come colored like that from time to time, a woman's voice said.
There was a woman in the mirror now, and it wasn't me. She was taller than me, slender, model thin, but not starved, just built that way. She had long, straight blonde hair that fell well past her waist to swirl in the white dress she wore. It was from a much earlier century than mine. Loose-fitting with long-belled sleeves that almost hid her hands. Gold ribbon laced her tight through the bodice so that it showed her small, high breasts to good effect. Her eyes were a clear, pale blue, the shade that coloring books tell you is what water looks like, but it almost never does in real life. She was almost everything that I'd ever wanted to be when I was about 12 to 16, when I realized I would never be any of it.
Wishes, she said.
When I was a child. Before I knew my own worth, yes, I said. She walked closer to her side of the mirror. The room looked identical, as if we were both standing in the same place. She was shining in the sunlight in a way that hair and skin didn't if you were human. She was almost unearthly in her beauty, like a shimmering white goddess.
Yes, I was a goddess once.
They worshipped you as one, I said.
You don't believe I'm a goddess?
I started walking toward the mirror as I said, No.
Could anyone but a goddess build a dream for us to speak in?
I've met other people who could create dreams and they weren't gods. The shining light of her flickered for a second like a bad connection on a video, and then it steadied to shine and be lovely again. I stood in front of the mirror now. It was a very old mirror, the glass full of imperfections, dark marks in the glass itself, a bubble here and there.
It was a marvel of craftsmanship in its day, she said.
I bet it was, I said, and looked at her like a tall, thin, blonde reflection in the mirror. I could see that there were flowers and leaves embroidered on the gold ribbon of her dress now. Why had she put me in a dress that was closer to Belle Moore's taste than hers? Or did she want to wear bright colors, but it washed her out?
I wear what I wish to wear, she said.
Pastels look terrible on me, but I bet they look wonderful on you, I said. The image of her flickered again. The shining white light gone for an eye blink, replaced with darkness, rough stone like a cave or a tomb. Then the white figure was back, shining harder, as if trying to make up for that last glimpse. Take no notice of that man behind the curtain. I could see that her high cheekbones were paired with a chin that was a little too pointed for my taste. A nose a little sharp. Witchy, I'd have said once, but I knew too many witches now, and none of them looked like that. I got another glimpse of the dark cave and her face bare of the light for a moment, and anger in those pale blue eyes. Too pale, not as rich a color as she was pretending to here in her dream. Our dream.
It is not your dream. It is mine.
Have it your way, I said. Why did you bring me to your dream?
I thought this would be more pleasant.
It's not a bad dream, so what do you want in this pleasant dream?
You have something I want,
the image in the mirror said. What's that? I asked.
Power.
Yeah, you and everybody else.
What?
She asked, as if I'd confused her. If she could read my mind, it shouldn't have confused her, which meant she could only read part of my thoughts.
I am in your mind, she said.
But you still don't understand everything I'm thinking or everything I'm feeling, do you?
I understand all.
But there was that flicker again. And I saw her standing in the dark place, her thin face closer to mine than she was in the dream. I don't remember the early deities claiming omniscience, I said. The flicker again, because I'd confused her again. She came back to the mirror in her white dress with its gold and embroidery, but she wasn't shining anymore. She was lovely, but not otherworldly so. Her eyes were blue, but I knew people with bluer ones.
When I have done with you, I will find your blue-eyed lovers and carve their faces down to ruin.
That scared me, and I couldn't hide it with her inside my head, and she understood the fear. She smiled a thin smile.
I wanted to make this pleasant between us, Anita, but if you are determined to be unpleasant, I know how to do that, too.
Dev lay on the floor beside me. His eyes were gone, just blood and thick bits as he screamed and reached out for me. I grabbed for his hand before I could think, and it felt real enough, but it wasn't. It wasn't, and I knew that it wasn't. I'd given her an awful idea to use against me, and she had, but it wasn't real. If she'd wanted to hurt me, this wasn't the man to choose. Dev vanished, and it was Nikki with both eyes bleeding and gone, but that wasn't right. He only had one eye, and she didn't know that. She wasn't perfect. Even this far into my subconscious, she couldn't see that clearly.
I see more clearly than your man will, after I take his last eye.
I carefully, very carefully, didn't think of anyone else, just put a blank wall between me and my thoughts. It was like shielding for metaphysics. Just think walls. I put up a wall between us, and it appeared in the middle of the room, dividing it in half with the mirror on the other side. She screamed then, and the scream shattered the wall so that I put up my arms to shield my face, and thought it was like the vampire exploding. I wasn't surprised to find a piece of stone embedded in my arm. I'd given her the image. I had to stop that. I pictured the wall again, but this time it was smoother, metal, and mine. Her power hit it, but the metal only bent with her efforts. It did not break. Her power beat against my wall, my metaphysical shielding, and she couldn't get through.
But you are still trapped in my dream, Anita Blake.
Was I? I wasn't sure how to break the dream without dropping the wall, and I wanted the wall to stay. I'd learned to do lucid dreaming where I could change dreams as I had them, or even break free of bad ones. But holding the wall while she battered it and trying to figure out a way to break the dream, was a few more balls to juggle than I could keep in the air. I started with the dress, and I was suddenly wearing black jeans, a black t-shirt, black boots, and my favorite holster with my favorite gun. I felt more me as I looked up at the metal wall dimpling as she beat on it. It bent here and there, but she couldn't break through. I could hold the wall. I could stand in the dream and be okay. Interesting. And I did my best to stop the thought there. No other memories. Nothing. I would give nothing to be used against me here. Nothing but the wall. Cool metal. Smooth without any handholds for her mind. She screamed again. The metal of the wall bending as if a giant had hit it. But it held. She couldn't get to me anymore. She couldn't play with me in dreams, and she couldn't make the dream into a nightmare. I could wait her out. She must have realized that because she decided to let me wake up. Or maybe I just woke on my own. Chapter 78. I woke in the dark place I'd seen in the moments when the dream wavered. It wasn't completely dark, though. There was natural light coming from somewhere in the wall or ceiling. I was in a thin beam of pale sunlight. I was also almost on my knees, but not quite, because chains at my wrists kept me from my knees or the stone floor. I'd been hanging there for a while because my shoulders were aching. I got to my feet slowly, carefully, because I knew it would hurt even more as full circulation came back to my shoulders, arms, and hands. I was wearing a red satin nightie that I'd never owned. For a second, I wondered if I'd fallen into another dream, but my arms hurt too much for that. I'd tried to be chained up like this for sexy bondage time back home, and found that I could only have my arms up like this for so long before I started to hurt. I'd done one scene where my legs had gone out from under me, and Asher had let me hang like that for a while. I hadn't said my safe word. If I had, he'd have unchained me and taken care of whatever hurt. But once he had unchained me, my arms had hurt more and for longer than ever before. If I couldn't hold myself upright when I was bound in some way, then I asked for a new position, or just to be held and loved. Unfortunately, there wasn't a safe word in the world that would get me out of this dungeon. I stood there and waited for the pain in my shoulders to die down enough for me to feel how much pins and needles were burning through my hands. I flexed them, trying to rush the process, because I'd woken up alone. No one was actually hurting me yet, or even guarding me. Good. First, I needed to be able to feel my hands, because it's hard to fight if you can't. As far as I could see, there was no electricity in the room. In fact, there were unlit torches in wall sconces, which meant there were no cameras, no way for them to watch me until they came into the room. Better. I kept flexing my hands and trying to rotate my shoulders to see if anything was damaged from hanging however long I'd been there. The daylight meant that either it was only a little later the same day or it was the next day. If the first, then I'd only been out for a couple of hours, tops. If the second, then I was lucky I could move my arms or feel my hands at all. It would also mean that whatever had happened in Dublin that night was over and I'd missed it all. That scared me, tightening my stomach, wondering if everyone I cared about was all right. Then I realized I was being stupid. I didn't need a phone to call home. I reached out to Nathaniel first, and there was nothing. Just a blankness which scared me even more. I took a deep breath, let it out slow, got myself calmer, and reached out for Dev. And nothing. I tried Jean-Claude, and again, nothing. It wasn't that everyone here in Ireland had died in some horrible vampire debacle. Something was preventing me from contacting anyone psychically. I'd had a human witch that was able to do that once, so the fact that the wicked bitch of Ireland would have someone powerful enough to do it shouldn't have surprised me. There was one opening in the room, a rough doorway that seemed to have stairs inside it that went up. Other than that, I didn't see any other doors. Unless there was a door at the top of those stairs to keep me prisoner, they were pretty confident they didn't need a door to hold me. I looked at the manacles on my wrists because that was what they were. They didn't lock with keys, but with a metal piece that slid through a hole. If I could have gotten one hand close enough to the other, I could have undone them, but the chains were too widely spaced for that. I looked at the chains themselves. They were big links, like the size of a log chain, so they were big and meant for holding things a lot heavier than me. They weren't fastened to the stone ceiling, but went through holes in the ceiling, which meant if someone was at the top of the room above me, they'd seen the chains move and knew I was awake. I'd been so busy looking for modern things I hadn't thought that old school would work just fine. I listened for movement that might let me know that they were coming to check on all that chain movement like a fish on a bobber, but it was quiet. I realized I could hear the sea. Dublin was a coastal city, so that shouldn't have surprised me. But somehow I thought of the room in the dream and the fact that the windows had looked out over the sea. It was as if the room in the dream were more real to me than Dublin and that one glimpse of the Irish Sea. I had a second to wonder if this was still a part of that dream, and then I smelled the damp and the mustiness of the room. I breathed deeper and could smell the saltier freshness of the sea air. You couldn't smell things when you were dreaming. I hugged that fact to myself because it helped me not worry about the whole dream versus reality thing. I'd treat it as real until I knew I was wrong. I heard voices on the stairs. I debated on pretending to still be unconscious, but I'd just gotten the feeling back in all my extremities, and besides, no one coming through the doorway would be human. They'd be able to tell if I was asleep just by my breathing and heart rate. There was really no sense in pretending, so I was standing, waiting when Hamish came through the doorway. But he wasn't with Rodrigo anymore. The man was tall, dark, and not handsome. He wasn't ugly, but he wasn't pretty either. It was like he had several great features, but they didn't all belong on the same face at the same time. He was definitely not handsome, but something about the way he carried himself as he entered the room made you want to look at him. There was an energy to him that made Hamish easy to overlook, which would have been a mistake because the flashiest person in the room isn't always the most dangerous. I caught a glimpse of white behind the second man, and it was the wicked bitch herself in person at last. She was wearing the same dress she'd worn in the dream, but it wasn't the shining perfection it had been. The dress had dirt on the hem from the rough stone floor, or maybe she'd gone for a stroll outside. She was still beautiful and sort of exotic, for lack of a better word, but it wasn't heavenly light and fireworks in the real world. The two men took up posts on either side of her, but a little in front, so they were between her and me. I wasn't sure if they were afraid I'd hurt her or she'd hurt me, but they were definitely placed so they could keep us apart if need be. Interesting.
Anita Blake, we meet at last.
I was thinking almost the same thing, though I don't know what name you prefer, I said.
M'lady will do.
You called me by my Christian name and surname. Seems like using a nickname would be too informal after that. I didn't want to call her m'lady. Maybe just stubbornness on my part, but I didn't want to use the name she forced people to use.
You are very calm for someone who awoke in chains, she said,
searching my face for some hint of what I was really thinking. I tried to shrug, but mainly made the chains rattle. Not being calm won't change anything.
Such possession of self is rare.
Thank you, I said.
I hope you do not mind the change of clothes, but your others had become quite disheveled.
I appreciate your thoughtfulness, I said.
I'd shared enough of Damien's memories to know that being nice to her was my best chance at not getting hurt. It might also make her more talkative, and I needed more information. Where was I? What day was it?
She watched me with those pale blue eyes that she'd worked so hard to make bluer in our shared dream.
There is no fear in you now. Perhaps I have been too generous and should have hung you up nude.
I said thank you. She frowned.
Allow me, mistress, the second man said.
Not yet, Keegan.
She walked closer until she was only about 2 feet in front of me. I could have kicked her, but I didn't see what it would gain me. They hadn't hurt me yet. If I hurt them first, that would probably change.
As my mistress wills, he said, but his face showed a sour disappointment.
Whatever he had offered, he enjoyed doing, and I would probably not enjoy it at all.
The first time I touched your energy through our shared vampire, you were nearly helpless before my terror. Now you stand before me and there is no fear in you. How can this be?
I just looked at her, willing myself to be calm and patient and wait. I wasn't sure what I was waiting for, but I was hoping I'd know it when it happened.
Lay your hands upon her mistress and her calm will shatter, Keegan said.
I would not recommend that, m'lady, Hamish said.
She turned and looked at Hamish.
Why should I not touch her?
You have both drunk deep of the powers of the Queen of All Darkness.
What of it?
Her powers will grow with touch as well. I told you what she did to Rodrigo.
I so wanted to ask what had I done to Roddy, but I didn't. They'd assume I knew exactly what I did, and either they wouldn't believe me, or they'd know just how new I was to some of my powers.
He is weak of will, Keegan said.
Rodrigo is petty, cruel, and nearly honorless, but he is not weak, Hamish said.
Are you saying I am no stronger than Rodrigo?
She demanded.
Hamish bowed and said, I would never say that, m'lady. We are all your humble servants and pale in comparison to your greatness.
I half expected her to call bullshit on the pretty speech, but she didn't. She seemed to take it as her proper due.
Then I will put the fear of me into her.
I advise against it, he said.
You dare to doubt our queen, Keegan said.
I never doubt the queen of nightmares, or we would not have come halfway around the world to serve her.
Then watch and learn, Keegan said.
She reached one pale hand toward me. I waited for her to hesitate at the sunlight, but she didn't. She moved through it as if she'd never seen a vampire go up in flames from it before. She touched my face, and it took a lot not to pull away, but I knew that would amuse her, and I didn't want to amuse anyone here.
She caressed my cheek and said, Such a pretty girl. I normally don't think dark hair and eyes are striking, but you are quite lovely.
Thanks. You too. On the lovely part, I mean. You're as pale as I am dark. I remembered through Damien's memories and Asher's story that she was very insecure, insanely insecure. When dealing with a crazy person, it's always safer to go along with the delusion as far as you can. If she wanted to be the fairest of them all, I would be her biggest cheerleader.
We would make a fine pair of opposites for some man's bed, you and I.
I didn't like that idea at all. I fought not to show it, but apparently failed because she smiled and said,
That bothers you. I would have thought that sex would not bother you being of Jean-Claude and Belle Moore's bloodline.
I tried to think of a polite way to put it, still trying not to trip her crazy.
We just met.
I like to get to know someone before I have sex with them, you know, at least a coffee date.
Coffee date, she said. What is a coffee date?
A woman's voice from the stairs said, When people meet online or in a place where they don't know each other well, they will often make their first private meeting in a public place like a coffee shop or cafe. They will have coffee or tea and talk. If the talk goes well, then they will plan a more traditional date. The woman was slender, taller than me by a few inches, but still shorter than everyone else in the room. She had soft white blonde curls spilling around her face in an artfully styled cloud that brushed her shoulder. I got to her face and had a moment of wondering if Rodrigo was cross-dressing, because the face looked identical to him, but the body underneath seemed female. Some cross-dressers are better at the switch than others, but still, I was betting I was looking at his twin. She was wearing black-on-black clothing top to bottom, and it looked a lot like what I normally wore to hunt vampires in, including the boots being more work than club. Her eyes looked as black as the clothing. In this light, I couldn't be certain, but I remembered staring up into her brother's eyes, and I was betting they were as black as his. Eyeliner and mascara made her eyes look larger and even more of a contrast between her pale skin with that spattering of freckles.
Rodina, what are you doing here? Keegan demanded.
He seemed to demand a lot.
I wanted to see the witch that has made my brother so useless. I would have said that no one could move Rodrigo, not like this, so I had to come see for myself.
This coffee date, why would they do such a thing?
The wicked bitch asked.
They believe that meeting in public, during the day especially, will keep them from being carried off by people who mean them harm. Dating when you are alone with someone means you have no one to come to your aid if they decide to do terrible things to you.
Somehow, as Rodina said it, the likelihood of terrible things happening seemed to grow. I wouldn't have wanted to be alone with either her or her brother. Those black eyes stared straight at me as she came down those last few steps and glided across the floor. She looked past her supposed queen as if she weren't there. I met her bold gaze and said, I bet you and Rodrigo are killers on a coffee date. She smiled, pleased with herself.
We like good coffee. Be ashamed to waste it on violence. So many things can get spilled.
So that first date, I said, must be a Lulu.
Lulu. I haven't heard that used in decades, Rodina said, rolling her eyes.
Do not play the teenager here. You are older than I am, Hamish said.
But I was a teenager when I stopped aging, when we stopped aging.
I'm sorry that your master did not find you sooner, Hamish, she said, trailing her fingers along his arm as she passed him. He turned so that he kept her in view like you did when you sparred. Once the gloves went on, all bets were off.
You seem not yourself, girl, Keegan said.
I feel very much myself today, she said, moving past Hamish so that she was closer to their mistress and me than anyone else.
Perhaps I should remind you that being too much yourself does not meet with my approval.
Rodina gave a small bow.
I am, as always, at your disposal, milady.
You know that I prefer that you curtsy, even when you are dressed like a man.
Rodina dropped into a low, perfect curtsy, even mimicking holding a long skirt out to the sides.
As you wish, milady, so shall it be.
She did not offer the other woman a hand up, and by rules of etiquette, Rodina was stuck in that very uncomfortable low curtsy until her mistress told her to get up or offered her a hand up. The vampire that didn't look very much like a vampire at all turned back to me.
Do you know why they all refer to me as Milady?
An endearing nickname? I said, trying to sound casual, because I was pretty sure we were getting closer to the painful part of things. She smiled, looking down demurely, though it looked like a practiced gesture and not a real one. Something you do because it's expected, but you don't mean it.
Because to say my name aloud is considered bad luck. To come to my attention at all is considered ill-fated.
I licked my lips and fought to keep my pulse even. I heard that, I said.
Allow me to demonstrate.
She offered her hand to Rodina, who raised a slightly startled face, but she had no choice but to take what was offered. Milady helped the other woman stand, but kept their hands entwined.
Milady, what have I done to offend thee?
I do not like your attitude today, and your brother's loyalty is in question. Do I need to question yours as well?
No, Milady, you do not.
We shall see,
the vampire said, and one minute Rodina was standing tall and sure of herself, except for a slight uncertainty in her black eyes, and then her knees buckled. My skin ran with goosebumps just being close to whatever was happening.
Please, mistress,
Rodina said through gritted teeth.
I like my servants humble, Rodina, and you and your brothers never quite get there.
The kneeling woman's face was so pale that her freckles stood out like ink against her skin. She looked as if she might faint.
Please,
she hissed it as if words were about to fail her.
Say my name, girl.
Milady,
she said, sweat breaking out on her face as if she had a sudden fever.
No, my real name.
Morovan.
No, my real name.
Nemhain,
the kneeling girl said in a voice that was strained as if she were in pain.
Scream my name, girl.
Do not make me do this, please.
Her words were pulled from between her teeth as if she were afraid to open her mouth too wide for fear she'd throw up. I could feel the power rolling off Nemhain, but I still didn't know what she was doing to the woman on the floor.
I will pull every horrible moment in your long life from your mind and make you relive the terror of it. All you have to do to stop me is do what I ask. Is that so harsh a burden, Rodina?
The girl shook her head, lips tightly closed. She was swaying on her knees now. She kept shaking her head as tears started to roll down her cheeks.
Nemhain! Nemhain!
She screamed the name until it echoed against the stone walls. The vampire let go of her hand and Rodina fell to the floor, one shaking arm catching her just before she would have lain on her side. She looked like what she really wanted was to curl up in a fetal position and weep, or throw up, or all three. But she fought to stay upright. She fought not to faint. She fought to save as much of herself as she could from what had just happened. Nemhain turned to me with a smile most unpleasant.
Now it's your turn, Anita. I suggest you call out my name much sooner than she did. After all, you are merely human, and do not have the reserves of strength that a shapeshifter does.
I tried not to tense up, but I couldn't help it. I breathed out fast and tried to relax into it. It helped with a beating sometimes, and this was just another type of beating. She reached out that pale hand, and I couldn't help but jerk back from it. She laughed high and wild, the kind of laugh that only comes out of supervillains and the truly insane.
Keegan would enjoy holding you for me, Anita, Or you can take your medicine like a big girl, like Radina did.
Keegan came up behind her, and there was something in his brown eyes that made me not want him to touch me, ever. Rodina's voice came shaking and weak-sounding, but she still said it.
Just take it. Don't make it worse.
Strangely, in that moment, I trusted the crazy bitch on the floor more than the one standing in front of me. I looked into Nemhane's pale blue eyes and said, Just do it.
So brave. I will break you of that before I am done.
Talk is cheap, girlfriend. Do it or don't. She frowned at me as if it wasn't the reaction she wanted. But she laid her hand against my face and called her power. We were both done being nice. Chapter 79. My skin ran in shivering goosebumps with all the power she pushed into me, but it was like standing in the middle of a river that flowed past the rock of me. I could feel the water, knew I was getting wet, but I was still above water, still safe and unmoved by the torrent. I looked into her blue eyes from inches away, with her hand cupping the side of my face, and all that energy flowing around, but not into me. Just like in the dream, she couldn't get past my shields.
No,
she whispered. I looked at her and said, Do you still want me to say your name?
This is not possible, Keegan said behind her.
I cannot see into your mind. I cannot draw your fears to the surface of it. The chains you wear are like the blade that slew your tiger. They are enchanted to separate you from all your other parts. Jean-Claude cannot help you while you wear them. You are a vessel for power, nothing more. I should be able to do with you as I like once you are shorn of all the other powers that aid you.
Surprise, I said softly. She poured more energy down her hand, put a second hand on the other side of my face so it looked like she was moving closer for a kiss.
No!
She shouted it, so angry, centuries worth of rage. I could smell it like something sweet and bitter rising off her skin. She was right on one thing. She had cut me off from all the other people that I was connected to metaphysically. It was supposed to make me weaker, but in that moment I realized I was like a loaded gun, and whatever she had done to me had taken off my safety. For the first time, I had the ability to feed on anger, thousands of years of untapped rage, and no one in my head or heart with more practice at controlling their hungers. I didn't think it was a bad idea or a good idea. I just fed on her. I fed on her hands as they cupped my face. I fed on the look in her pale eyes as they widened in surprise. I fed skin to skin, draining her down as she held me. So much anger. I felt my eyes fill up with my own power. I watched her face grow peaceful as she fell into my gaze, and still I drank her rage. I'd never tried to drain anyone like this, but then I'd never had anyone who offered such a feast of time and ire. Hands dragged her away from me, but she reached out to me, wanted to keep touching me, like any vampire victim once you mind-fuck them deep enough. Keegan and Hamish held her between them. Her eyes were still unfocused like a sleepwalker's.
Her eyes, Hamish said,
and it took me a second to understand it wasn't Morovan's eyes he was referring to, but mine. Keegan looked up at me and then at the floor. He wouldn't look me in the eyes while they were glowing. I felt like every inch of my skin should have been glowing with power, not just my eyes. Oh my God, it felt so good. The wicked bitch, who turned out not to be so wicked after all, took a deep, shuddering breath and looked up at me. I'd thought I'd drunk deep of her rage until I looked into her eyes again. Hatred, such burning hatred. It filled her eyes, her face, as if she were formed of it. Something in that one look did what all her power hadn't done before. It scared me. I don't know why, but I couldn't keep my pulse even, couldn't stop that spurt of adrenaline. It's always funny what will scare you and what won't. You never know, not even about yourself.
That's better,
she said in a voice that was icily calm and controlled and didn't match the hatred in her eyes at all.
Mistress, are you well? Hamish asked.
Answer him for us, Keegan,
she said.
The woman is afraid now. We are very well indeed, the man said, smiling a most unpleasant smile.
Why would she be afraid now? Rodina asked, her voice still holding an edge of the fear that Morovan had caused her.
She sees me now, don't you, Anita?
I swallowed past the lump in my throat, my mouth suddenly dry. I couldn't have explained it, but I'd never had anyone look at me with such hatred. I don't know why, but it did frighten me. Damn it.
I could feed upon your fear now, as you fed upon my anger, but I think I will let your fear grow first. You have so little inside you that it is not a feast for me.
She walked closer to me and peered into my face.
Not yet, anyway, but it will be, Anita. I promise you that before I kill you and take the power that is rightfully mine, I will create inside you a fear to equal my hatred.
I had to swallow again to say, I'm not sure there's enough fear to equal your hatred, Morovan. She smiled, and it was a prettier one than Keegan's, but they were still the same smile. It was most unpleasant and promised worse.
See, Anita, I knew you would say my name. In a few hours you will scream both my names.
I shook my head. I don't think so. But my heart seemed to be in my throat. Why did the hatred make me more afraid than the anger? Then I realized I had my own anger, but I wasn't sure that I hated anything as much as Morovan hated the world.
We will leave you to contemplate your fate, Anita, but not alone. No, my Harlequin brought a very special guest to keep you company.
My pulse had been calming down, but now it skyrocketed. Who did she have? Who else had she kidnapped? I tried to think who else had been in the hotel. Nathaniel and Damien had been with the police. They were safe. Who else did that leave? Donnie and Griffin had been in the lobby, but I prayed hard for so many people not to come down those stairs, but Edward wasn't on the list. Somehow the thought of it being Edward didn't seem possible, as if he weren't touchable. I knew that wasn't true, but I was less worried about him than about almost anyone else I loved in Ireland. She watched my face as she said,
"Bring in our other guest."
As if they'd been waiting on the stairs for her order, two men walked into view, carrying a third between them. My heart fell all the way to my feet. My knees went weak, and I had to make my hands into fists to keep myself upright and not to show more emotion than I already had. It was Nathaniel. I didn't know how they'd gotten him away from the police and all the people who were supposed to keep him safe, but there he was, the absolute last person I wanted to see dragged in here with me. God help me! God help us! He was shirtless with his arms fastened behind his back. I couldn't see any injuries on him, which was a relief. The long braid of his hair was piled on top of his body as if they'd tripped on it at some point and just gotten it out of the way. They'd tied a piece of gray cloth across his mouth for a gag. I stared into his wide lavender eyes and felt unmanned. To keep him safe, I would do anything. We were both so fucked. He was in manacles too, but he had them on his wrists and his ankles, with more chain wrapping around his upper body and his legs. They'd carried him down because he could barely bend his body in the chains, let alone walk.
I knew there had to be more fear in you somewhere, Anita. And there it is. And all for this man. Your leopard to call. Your fiancé, so I'm told. Though you seem to have promised yourself to more men than you can actually wed. How does Mr. Grayson feel about your wedding plans to Jean-Claude?
I didn't know what to say. I couldn't seem to think of anything useful. I tried to think of anything that wouldn't make this worse or give her the emotions she was wanting to feed on, but nothing constructive came to mind. For once in my life, I was frozen and didn't know what to do. I mentally screamed at myself to get my shit together, to think, but all I could do was look into his eyes and be afraid for him. Fuck, I had to do better than this.
Speechless with fear already, Anita. Do I need to do something to help loosen your tongue?
That I had an answer for. No. No. Even the extra no was nerves, and she knew it. Damn it. She went to Nathaniel and stroked the heavy braid, gathering it up in her hands and letting it fall to the floor. He looked at me, ignoring her as if she wasn't there. I stared into those lavender eyes, that face, and tried to sense him. He wasn't just one of my moiety bête. He was the other third of my own private triumvirate, but I couldn't feel him at all, as if he were less present than the other people in the room.
Whatever magic was on the chains made Nathaniel almost blank. I couldn't sense his energy at all, but I could sense hers, and Keegan's, and Hamish's, and Rodina's, but not Nathaniel's. The metal didn't keep me from being psychic. It just kept me from being psychic with the people I was metaphysically joined with. That was interesting. Maybe even useful. I couldn't think how to use that knowledge yet, but it was something, and I'd take it, because something was better than what I'd had a second ago.
Such beautiful hair, she said.
She stroked down his chest, touching the bare skin between the chains. Nathaniel got touched more than that when he danced on stage at Guilty Pleasures. We were okay. We were okay. I kept repeating that in my head like a mantra.
He's in such good shape, Anita. So much exercise to put all that muscle on his chest and arms. All your men seem to be quite fierce about their gym routines. But then so are you, aren't you?
Yes, I said, because she didn't seem to like silence. Yeah, we work out.
The tiger that we left wounded in the hotel killed two of my rowans before he came to help you. My seal folk are not the Harlequin, but they are well trained. The fact that he slew two of them so quickly is testament to the training of your guard.
Ethan killed two of your men. I wondered what kept him out of the fight in the other room so long. She motioned at the two men holding Nathaniel, as if close to 200 pounds of muscle wasn't heavy at all.
They wish that my Harlequin had brought your wounded warrior here, so they could revenge their brethren on him.
I looked at the men more closely. One had black hair with dark brown eyes. The other had paler brown hair with gray eyes. They were handsome in that traditional guy way, but with Damien and Nathaniel in the room, they just didn't look that good to me. I was biased, but they were broad through the shoulders and looked like there was the promise of muscle under their clothes. They didn't have the black-on-black eyes that Rourke and Riley had had. I'd started thinking I could spot all the Rowan, or Selkies, from their eyes, but apparently not. Good to know. She came to stand in front of me again.
Do you want to know how we came to have your Mr. Grayson in our power?
Sure, I said, and my voice was almost as uninterested as I was trying for, and I'd almost gotten my pulse under control. The plan hadn't changed. Be nice, be polite, don't trip her crazy, and make her think she is the most beautiful thing in the room. The only thing that had changed was that the stakes had been raised for the moment when I stopped being nice again. I kept my thoughts from going any farther down that track. One moment at a time, just this moment, deal with this moment. The next moment can go fuck itself until we get to it.
You recover yourself very quickly, Anita. It makes you very interesting to me.
Maybe we can go shopping sometime and have girl talk, I said, and even managed a smile.
Are you making fun of me?
No. If you wanted to go out shopping, gossiping, and girl bonding, I'd be totally down with that. She frowned at me.
I do not understand you.
Just offering to be friendly, I said.
You cannot be friends with your food, Anita. You have already fed upon me, and I will return the favor soon.
I'm engaged to be married to a vampire. I can be very friendly to people who feed off of me.
I, too, feed upon my servants, she said,
and motioned at Keegan,
but would never allow them to feed upon me, even were they capable of it.
It was really good to know that he was her human servant. I'd thought probably, but it was nice to have it confirmed. If I got a chance to try to kill anyone other than her, he'd go to the top of the list, because now I knew that killing him might kill her, too.
Yippee.
Most servants of vampires can't feed on their masters, I said.
Not just most, Anita. All, or all save for Jean-Claude and his new bloodline. There seems much confusion in his newfound power on who is master and who is slave.
We understand who wears the pants in the family, I said. I could be calm as long as I didn't look at Nathaniel, but just focused on the white bitch in front of me. I was doing my best to sort of pretend he wasn't here. It helped me think better.
You may find that the pants have changed owners, she said, then called out, Rourke, bring our other guest.
And just like that, my heart was racing, and I looked at Nathaniel. His eyes widened as if to tell me something with a look, but for once I couldn't read his expression. Without our ties open between us, I was headblind and just had to watch as Rourke, King of the Rowan, walked down the steps. His dark eyes stared at me as if he'd never begged me to kill him or been anything but tall, imposing, and hers. He came into the room radiating energy much more than he had at the church. He was leading another man by the hand. It took me a second to realize it was Damien. My fear spiked again until I realized Damien wasn't chained or restrained in any way that I could see. He just walked down the stairs with Rourke like they were buddies. What the fuck was going on? Chapter 80. Morovan went to Rourke and greeted him with a kiss. If he didn't want to kiss her back, it didn't show. Had he lied in the church, or was her control of him just that good outside of the church? If we all survived long enough, I'd ask. Damien stood beside them, his face almost blank. His eyes were open, but it was as if he didn't see anything in the room. I realized that Rourke wasn't leading him by the hand. He was holding Damien's wrist. It seemed odd, but then Damien just standing there while the two of them kissed was odd. Damien! I called his name, and he jumped as if I'd startled him. Damien! He blinked and looked at me then. For a second, he was in there looking at me. He said, Anita! Morovan laid her hand beside Rourke's, so they were both touching him at the same time, and his eyes went blank again. What have you done to him? I asked. She looked at me and smiled that unpleasant smile that Keegan shared with her. I wondered if it had started out as his or hers.
Once I separated you from your servants, Damien was mine again, as he has always been. He gave himself and Mr. Grayson over to me once your powers were not clouding his mind.
I don't believe that.
He betrayed your Nathaniel as soon as I called to him. He came back to me because you are not vampire enough to hold him.
There was no way that Edward would have let them just walk out of the police station. It made me want to ask if anyone besides Nathaniel had been betrayed. But there was nothing for me in that line of questioning. Once we got out of here, then I'd ask Damien and Nathaniel all sorts of questions, but not in front of her. Not with her making his eyes go dead. I had to believe we would get out of here because I had too much at stake to think anything else. Morovan leaned in against Damien's body, raising her face up toward him for a kiss. His eyes were alive again, his again, and he actually flinched away from her. She said, "Kiss me, Damien!" She made it an order, and he bent toward her, but his eyes stayed aware. He did not want to kiss her, and that was enough to bring him partially out of her control, even with her and her animal to call touching him. "Damien, don't kiss her," I said. He stood back up straight and tall, too tall for her to reach him. She turned to me with a hiss. Her eyes glowed blue.
"He is mine."
"You sent him to Jean-Claude. You were done with him once, Morovan. Why do you want him so badly now?"
"Because he is mine!"
She screamed it, the glow fading from her eyes. "If all you wanted was your lover back, you could have sent a letter," I said. She moved away from Rourke and Damien, and I expected his eyes to go back to being blank, but they didn't. Something about the interchange between us all was helping him fight it. If I could only figure out what had helped and keep doing it.
"A letter would not have brought me you, Anita, and that is what I wanted. That you brought Damien back to me is a wonderful gift, and I will never give him up again."
"Why did you give him up to Jean-Claude in the first place?" I asked. More information could only help, right?
"Your lord and master wrote to me, said that he had dreamed of Damien's pale flesh for centuries, and that he would force Damien to be his catamite. It was something that our crimson-haired vampire had a near mortal terror of,"
and she laughed at her own wordplay. Most of the people in the room who belonged to her laughed. Rodina and Hamish were the exceptions. Maybe their white bitch of a queen wasn't all she was cracked up to be for them. "You had men here," I said. "You didn't have to send Damien all the way to America for a little sodomy." She made an unhappy face.
"What good to me is a man who prefers men? I do not collect such men. I gave him up to be tormented by Belmore's prize pupil, only to find that when Damien returns home, he has a taste for men now. Jean-Claude must possess some witchery that I did not envision."
I fought to keep my face blank, because I knew it wasn't Jean-Claude's witchery at all. Nathaniel was two for two being the only male lover of two heterosexual men. I was pretty sure Jean-Claude and Asher had more to their credit, but no one that I knew. She tried to walk all the way around Nathaniel and the two Rowan, but Rodina was in the way of her skirts.
"Oh, for God's sake, girl,
Rise and go stand with Hamish.
Rodina didn't make Morovan order twice, just got to her feet and moved over to stand with her fellow Harlequin. They might not like each other a lot, but neither of them liked Morovan at all. I wasn't sure how I was so positive of that, but I was, and somehow I knew I was right. Jean-Claude is one of the most beautiful men on the planet, I said. I mean, I may be prejudiced in his favor, but he is the king of seduction.
I know how seductive he can be, Anita. Or did he neglect to mention that he was my lover?
He told me that Belmore and you traded Damien and him for a while.
I tried to keep him, but Belle would not give up one of her favorite puppets.
I heard that too, I said.
Did they tell you what one of my passions is, Anita?
I'm not sure, I said, because I wasn't.
Ruined beauty, she said.
No, Damien said loud and clear. He actually stepped forward with